Welcome to CBuzz, the Columbus Chamber of Commerce's award-winning podcast and also Columbus's first business-focused podcast. Our show is presented by the Columbus Chamber of Commerce and Capital University. My name is Michaela Hunt, brand journalist and your host for CBuzz, where we really bring you unique and impactful stories directly from leaders right here in our own Central Ohio business community. We are coming to you from our home at Capital University's Convergent Media Center, a collaborative space for students and faculty to study everything from music and film to creative writing and digital media. We are excited to tell some pretty incredible stories through this platform. Now, today we're sitting down with Catherine Doherty, founder and CEO of Spritz Beverages Company. Spritz tea has zero calories. It's all natural and plant-based, keto-friendly, non-alcoholic. What more could you ask for, Catherine? Thanks for being here today.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I have to say this. I tried Spritz before I really understood that I was going to get a chance to interview you.
Oh, interesting.
And it's delicious.
Thank you.
And this is not me just saying that. I want to tell you that as we start out. I am a plain water drinker. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some of our listeners out there are the same way. And there are other brands, which will not be named, that I've tried and I haven't liked. And while I know this is tea and not water, it felt like a really good flavored option for a plain water drinker. So way to go.
Awesome. Thank you.
I know this has been a labor of love and now it is really moving.
Yes. What a ride.
We're going to talk about the ride today with our listeners. You know, it's delicious, as I said. You've had great success. How did the idea for this business even start?
You know, so I get that question so often because especially people that know my background, which is Johnson & Johnson medical devices, they're like, how did you get from health tech into beverage? How did that happen? But honestly, the answer is it was just really organic. It was 2016. I was training for my first half Ironman. A lot of my friends, I lived in Cincinnati at the time. We were all triathletes, long distance runners. We loved dinner parties. I love hosting. I have an extremely large amount of servingware. And we just love to get together on Friday nights, right? You get together with your girlfriends, you're celebrating all the great things in life, you're supporting each other during the challenging parts of life, you're sitting down to a beautiful meal that you've all kind of brought together potluck style. And for us, that moment where we sit and we're about to sort of start our meal and unpack our lives, usually has a toast, right? We all raise our glasses, but we were all also getting up really early on Saturday mornings to go run 12 miles. And as much as I love red wine, it just wasn't going to work for the goals that we had.
You're not going to want to get out of bed necessarily as quickly and spryly as you normally would.
And man, you really feel those couple glasses of red wine around mile six.
Oh, good to know. I'm not a runner, so that is good to know.
You're really like, man, should have stuck with the water last night. And it was actually that point of tension that led to the creation of Spritz. I wanted a more interesting non-alcoholic alternative, something that looked beautiful in a glass that could give us that moment, that opportunity to raise a glass, to cheers each other and have it not be a mocktail full of sugar, a club soda that felt boring, water that felt, you know, super healthy for us, but also not really that exciting, or alcohol, which felt, you know, celebratory, but wasn't great for the training goals. And so that was kind of the moment where I was like, there's just got to be something better. And for me, I was a big tea drinker. I still drink hot tea in the evenings. And I was on a big hibiscus kick. It was summertime. I wanted something kind of fruity. And I thought to myself, gosh, you know, this has like this beautiful kind of dark red color. It's got this great aroma. It's got these really kind of complex flavors. What if I made a concentrate of this and then mix it with some bubbly water and chilled it? Could I make like a tea champagne? That was kind of the concept.
Wow.
And that's what I did next week. I was like, sure, why not? Let's do this. And sure enough, you know, I ended up with this kind of, you know, light red, maybe like pink color, a pink color, these little bubbles that were just like champagne bubbles. You know, they weren't like the big, you know, bubbles of like a soda or a sparkling water. They were a little bit more delicate. And I poured it into the pitcher and it just looked beautiful. And it had the little bubbles and it had this beautiful aroma to it. And I served it to my girlfriends in wine glasses. And you just looked at the tablescape and you looked at this moment of being able to raise our glasses and we were like, this is it. This is the solution here. And so, you know, we enjoyed our dinner. We each had a couple glasses of my, you know, tea champagne. And then the next morning we all got together at our local running store at 7 a.m. and we're like, we all feel great, you know.
Let's go.
And that was actually where the idea came, was 2016. And then I spent over a year probably just making it at home in my kitchen, playing around with different tea types and, you know, different juices and, you know, lime juice, lemon juice, a little grapefruit, just to kind of really have like my own little mini lab. And this is also around the time of, you know, 2017, a lot of cultural conversations around women in entrepreneurship, the Me Too movement's really big. I'm starting to learn more about some of the gaps in the world of startups around female leadership. And I just started to feel very passionate about, I need to go and start a company. Like I want to, you know, call it cheesy, but I want to be that change that I want to see in the world. I want to see more women starting companies, leading companies, raising capital, exiting companies, and then passing that on to the next generation of female leaders. And if I want to see that change, I need to be part of that change. And so it was really not until 2017 that I started to think about how could I take this concept that I had made at home that has an opportunity to start to change the category of beverage and really begin to turn to a business. And that was, I mean, that 1 year of kind of percolating on ideas and playing around with formulations is really what led me to taking the dive and forming a company in late 2017.
We're going to unpack some of that dive. That was a great foundation and so good to know some of that. I will say, as the tech crew behind the glass raises their can, right? Like we're raising our cans right now. What you said about a delicate bubble, that literally was being talked about before you even arrived to this recording. It's not the usual fizz that you find. Did you have to perfect that delicate bubble a little more after that initial hibiscus experiment? Because you did. It's working for you.
Thank you. Yeah, it was very intentional. You know, I think like anything, there's a range where right now you think carbonated or non, but there's no reason there can't be more of a diversity in that. And again, the way that I always kind of anchored on it was champagne bubbles, little bubbles, you know, fizzy, not that bite. Because I think we've all had that moment where we've like accidentally chugged a LaCroix and then we're like, oh God, what have we done?
yes, I love it.
Right?
Because,
and you're like
yes.
Choking on it and it's kind of like it hurts for some reason and it's like in your nose and you're like, man, that's not the experience I wanted. And so it was really, you know, looking for something that still had the little bit of bubbles, a little bit of fizz, you know, the texture, without having sort of the bite of the big ones.
And a good flavor, like a flavor that feels nicely complex in a few different ways.
Absolutely. We've also really tried to have a lot more density to our flavor as well. So if you think about, and not to pick on LaCroix, but that's a nice standard I think most people can relate to. But, you know, a pamplemousse is like at some point, this LaCroix may have been within the general vicinity of a grapefruit. Maybe.
Literally, we were saying this before you walked in.
This one, you're like, oh no, yeah, there's like actual stuff in here. I can taste this. There are ingredients.
Well, and to your point, so healthy, keto friendly, vegan friendly as well. And when I think about all this and your competition, you were saying there just wasn't anything out there that looked and tasted as good, which is kind of crazy because we've been in this flavored water, carbonated or not, and other beverages for a while. Mm-hmm. And you just didn't feel like, you just thought the competition was not good.
My perfect drink didn't exist. You know, the density of flavors that soda gives, where you're actually like, I can taste something, right? But that comes with corn syrup, aspartame, sugar, not good for us. LaCroix, healthy, zero calories, zero sugar, awesome, but like bigger bubbles and doesn't have a ton of flavor. Tea, super healthy for us, doesn't have the most contemporary flavor profiles, tends to sometimes still have sugar and kind of lacking the texture aspect that LaCroix has. And so for me, I was like, why can't we pull the best from each of these categories and get flavor and little bubbles and health benefits from tea and package it into something that also not only from a liquid standpoint is differentiated, but really brand it in a way that's appealing to, you know, a demographic that I do still think is kind of underserved in the beverage market.
So how long did you stick with this Johnson & Johnson tech job while this is happening in 2017 to where we are today? Like, how did you know it was time to make the big switch? And how long did you kind of balance both? Do your 40 hours, but work on this on the side?
Yeah, I worked full time until the end of 2019. So I worked on Spritz throughout, you know, end of 2017, all of 2018 through product development, formulation, engineering. 2019 was all branding, figuring out our supply chain, manufacturing, where are we going to warehouse this? You know, do we have a website? Those kind of questions. And it wasn't really until the end of 2019 where we pulled the trigger to actually do our very first ever production run that I was like, okay, it's time to go full time on this. We got to give the full effort. And that was really when I had the courage and confidence to leave the safe shores of Johnson & Johnson and head into the darkness of entrepreneurship, where you're just like, I guess I'm going to figure this out as we go.
I'm feeling my way around.
Pretty much.
I have some really great ideas, but I'm feeling my way around because it's brand new. It's a brand new journey.
Brand new.
So in regard to that, how did you know, and maybe when did you know, that it was going to be successful? I mean, after that first production run, what was your market indicator, if you would, that, you know, this was going to work?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm being really honest, I'm still asking that question, right? Beverage is an incredibly difficult category, and we are still obviously operating within the confines of a global pandemic, which is really challenging for a product like mine that relies on grocery stores and restaurants. But if I were to say kind of early indicators that gave the courage to make that step, we did do a pretty decent amount of market research, both on a category basis as well as on a concept and a product basis. So three types of market research occurred that sort of really gave the oomph to go forward. Number one, category. Looking at the size of the beverage market, looking at the trends of the beverage market, looking at who the core demographics are that are rising in power and influence in the beverage market. So who do retailers care about, and what are the opportunities to create a product that is on trend in all those areas? That is exactly what met the criteria of the product I've created. Everybody loves bubbles. People want flavor. Sugar and corn syrup is out. And the top two dietary trends are vegan and keto. So that was the first thing, just kind of big macroeconomic data. Then I looked at what's called a concept test. This is where I present the idea of the product to consumers and say, if I gave you a bubbly tea that had no calories and no sugar and da-da-da-da-da-da, would you try this? Do you like the concept of this product? We had fantastic results from that. People were like, yeah, that sounds great. Like, I don't think anything like that exists, but boy, that sounds like it would kind of solve my beverage problem. So that's concept research. And then third was we actually did like usage research, like product research. We had 150 samples of the product made in a lab and had people taste test. So that was really the opportunity to say, okay, we've had this concept that's resonated with potential customers and consumers. Now, here's the product. Does it deliver on this? Would you buy this again? Would you tell people about this? What does advocacy look like? What does adoption look like? And again, we surpassed, you know, on a net promoter score basis, on on an adoption basis, you know, every benchmark in the beverage industry. So we had a net promoter score of about 60. And for a frame of reference, an average net promoter score for a non-alcoholic beverage is going to be about 10.
Wow.
So really, really great data points around the market and where we're sitting, the concept and how it resonates with consumers, and the likelihood of adoption and advocacy. Those three things helped inform greatly the fact that we were like, we've got something that's worth pursuing.
But how did you know to do all this? Was it a Johnson & Johnson background that allowed you everything that you just shared with us, which I think is super key and very insightful? Did you know that from the work you did at Johnson & Johnson, or did you surround yourself with great people who gave you great advice?
Both, exactly. So, you know, number one, yes, I did do some new product development at Johnson & Johnson, which means I did do market research. So understanding what is a concept versus a concept and use test, and being able to assess some of those things, utilizing skills I learned at Johnson & Johnson and applying them to my own business. But I think even more is that, and this is to, you know, anybody that's listening that wants to start a business, is there are so many people out there where if you just say, I want to do this and I'm not sure where to start, will help you. And I said that to so many people, including Google, by the way, which is also a great, amazing resource. You can ask Google pretty much anything. It's got some answers for you. And that's a really great way to begin to even, you know, undertake this process of learning how do you validate an idea, whether that's, you know, a new service, whether it's a new product, whether it's a tech company, is being able to get some really early market data through surveys, through interviews, through just looking at large, you know, category data to be able to really understand if there's an opportunity for you to pursue. So for me, yeah, Johnson & Johnson, but even more than that is just asking people in the Columbus community for help and advice and insight.
Is there anything you would have done differently when you were first starting out, now looking back?
Well, there's probably two answers to that question. I would try to have gone faster, or I would have gone slower. The timing of a product launch in January of 2020 is not ideal.
Who knew?
Who knew, right? So being able to time that differently, if I had known all the cards, I would have done one of those two things, and then I would have bought a lot of Zoom stock. those would have been the things I would have done if I had a time machine.
Yep.
But I think as much as we can all say, you know, hindsight 2020, regardless of if I could change anything, I know that I would still encounter obstacles. I know that I would still learn a ton. This sounds maybe strange, but I actually don't think I would change anything because the obstacles that I've had to grapple with and overcome with 100% confidence, I know have made me a better businesswoman, a better leader of my company. You know, I'm war tested now, because you've gone through so much that I think if anything, I'm now a stronger leader of my company because of what we've had to, you know, go through the past 2 years.
War tested and Kroger approved.
Kroger approved.
How about that? It's amazing. So this happened just prior to us recording this session. How are you feeling?
Oh, on top of the world. And you want to talk about validation? That is validation right there. Kroger is one of the hardest retailers to get into. They are the hardest grocery retailer. And the non-alcoholic beverage set is one of the most difficult sets to get into. And so to be afforded the opportunity to not only get into Kroger, but to get into Kroger beverage is a huge proof point to the concept that I brought to market and that the buyer believes in the emerging category of sparkling tea. They believe in the product and in the branding and how it's going to attract sort of the demographic they're focused on. And the liquid itself inside is something that consumers will buy multiple times.
Was there also a big gulp when this happened?
Absolutely. 100%. It was like, this is thrilling and terrifying all at once.
And I take it you've received some good advice about that.
Oh man, I am so thankful to so many people that I am messaging constantly asking for advice, whether that's just the local Columbus startup community, whether it's people that I've brought on to my team in particular to sort of surround myself with the industry expertise that I'm still building up, whether it's just, you know, the brokers that we work with to really help us navigate the behemoth that is a Kroger. You rely so much on the expertise of people around you, as you should, because you cannot do it alone.
How would you describe your typical week? I mean, I understand you're pretty active professionally, personally, like community involvement. Break that down for me with where you are right now.
Boy, is the 40-hour work week gone, gone, gone. let's see. On Sunday, I sat with my bookkeeper for 3 hours. And
fun times on a Sunday.
Yep, pretty much. You know, we had a bottle of wine, so that helped. It's like double points. It's like we're working and we're socializing at the same time. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, gosh, God, how do I even answer that question? You know, there are no real defined lines anymore. So sometimes you're working 8 p.m. to midnight. Sometimes you're working on the weekends. Sometimes you're working 9 to 5. It completely varies because the business is so dynamic. Some days I have what feels like a 14-hour workday. Some days I feel like I can get away with a 4-hour workday. It's not nearly as easily categorized into a Monday through Friday 9 to 5 as a different job. It's just so dynamic. I mean, here we are on what day is it? Today, Tuesday?
It is, yes.
Yes. See, that's a nice little glimpse into my life. I have no idea what day it is. I just know I've been working for like 20 days straight. So here we are on a Tuesday. We're doing this great podcast. This is fantastic. But this is like an example of, you know, yeah, it's going to be a Tuesday night and I'm going to record a podcast for a bit. And then I'll have a little bit of social time. And then after that, I'll probably get back on my laptop. And you just kind of constantly, you know, swivel between strategic, thoughtful work and just whack-a-mole with, you know, the ups and downs of running a business.
The whirlwind, I like to call it, right? You have the strategy and then you have the whirlwind.
Yes.
One thing I love on your cans, everybody can see this, you guys pledge 1% of all sales to support female-focused nonprofits. And, you know, at the start of all this, you were discussing with us the importance of women and how they're showing up in the startup community and some of the changes we've needed to see over the course of the last several years. So I kind of know, obviously, already why it's important to you to contribute a portion of sales and gender equality initiatives as well. So beyond realizing that there was a gap in the startup area, why female-focused nonprofits? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so I think, let's see, how would I answer this? There's probably multiple components to it. So first of all, if I think of it through a strategic lens for my company, consumers today really look to brands, products, services that are aligning to their values. Tom's was a leader in this regard. So they are, you know, somebody who believes in providing footwear to underprivileged communities around the world. And a lot of consumers today want to understand that the brands that they're choosing to purchase have a purpose beyond profit. So that's number one. Number two, it is extremely important to me as a woman, as a leader of a company, that I participate in the change in culture that we are seeing. It's happening slowly, but it's happening. And the way that I can do that is by running a company and being an example and a role model to others. It can be how I represent the female consumer in social media, showing her as strong and empowered and educated and supported by other women working together towards goals, which is, you know, anybody that follows beverage advertising is not always how they're represented. So I think that's part of it. And then number three is just really making sure that we are supporting the organizations and the values that we believe in every day by either donating product, donating straight, you know, dollars, donating time to these types of organizations. So I really look at it as, you know, how can I lead in multiple ways? And how can I also activate people who have the same values as me to help kind of get that flywheel going? Because if I'm as a consumer, I look to buy products that are led by women, because that is one small way that I can, you know, vote with my wallet, as they say, to show where my values are and to try to drive my particular dollars to invest back into these communities that are very meaningful to me. And so that's, you know, it's probably a long answer, but it's what we do, you know, financially with my company is just one small way that we can live up to our greater vision and mission and purpose, which is building a beautiful brand that is female forward, is functional, is healthy, and is empowering to that consumer, because we represent her far beyond, you know, any kind of simple role that I think a lot of other brands, you know, represent a female in.
For the hers that are female entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. What advice would you give them?
Go for it. Go for it and ask for help every single step of the way.
Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. It's really hard. I'm not going to lie there. It's incredibly hard. But one, you can do it. Just surround yourself by people who have done it. Ask for mentors and, you know, try to find people who are going to give you really good sound advice. Like, I will mentor any woman that comes my way because I want to be able to give back to the next generation. And by that exact same token, every single, you know, woman who wants to be an entrepreneur, go out, do it. And then all the mistakes that you make, because you're going to make a ton of them, it's normal, learn from them, and then tell the next generation of female entrepreneurs, hey, don't do this. Try this instead. It is really about that cycle of supporting each other. And, you know, we can build incredible companies, brands, services, technology. you know, whatever you're thinking about, whatever problem you see in this world, nonprofits, you can build nonprofits. Any problem you see in this world can be solved in partnership with, you know, these types of things. And you can just, you got to tackle it one thing at a time, right? Maybe my vision is to build an international, you know, conglomerate beverage company, but I got to start by getting Kroger in Cincinnati and Columbus. And like, that's the first step. And I think sometimes people, you know, they look at the mountain and they say, I'm never going to get to that top. And I'm like, you just take the first couple steps, you know, find the little milestones, take the steps forward. You know, you don't have to, you know, look at what you're going to do for the next 10 years. Just try to think a little bit about what can you do for the next 10 days to start creating, to start moving your idea into something real.
Very, very solid advice. So what's your favorite flavor?
I'm not allowed to answer that question.
Are you not allowed to answer that?
That's like asking somebody their favorite child.
Okay, that is true.
Okay, fine. It's my eldest. It's pink guava.
I mean, pink guava is pretty darn good.
It's the original, you know.
And I was wondering if it was based on how you explained it earlier when you were talking about kind of how you were putting together the concept. I was about to say prototyping, but I wasn't.
It kind of was.
Yeah,
it's like an early prototype.
But and so that's what I tried. I'm trying wild acai today. There you go. And impressed. So
you got to smell that one too. That one has a really beautiful like rose scent to it. It's been, you know, especially like if you pour it in a glass where you can really get like a good, what do you call it? Like a surface area of exposure.
I would look to you to define what that is. I'll remember that surface area.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think that's really where you can get like a good aroma of the acai one.
But I can't taste the rose and I'm actually really appreciative of that because I don't think I like the taste.
Super, super florals are hard to work with.
And that's not what this is.
Very, very subtle.
Super subtle. You know, one of the reasons we have conversations like the one we're having here today is we believe that continued personal and professional development is one of the most valuable aspects a person can have, you know, as a leader in business. So before we go, here's what I want to hear from you. And we were talking about TV shows. I don't think the one we were talking about prior to the recording is going to end up in this, but maybe. We'd love to hear what's influencing you lately, whether it is a TV show, a podcast, or a book. I would love to know what's really hit at the heart of where your head is right now and where your company is moving. Like you read it and you're like, oh my gosh, that speaks to so much right now. And, or maybe just a little bit, but influencing you in a way that you think is really making a difference.
So the first thing I would suggest is a podcast. It's called Startup Therapy. It's actually hosted by a friend of mine who lives here in Columbus, Will Schroeder, and his colleague, Ryan Rattan. It is the most realistic view into entrepreneurship I have ever heard, which is like, here's what it actually is like, and normalizes the crazy roller coaster. Because what you oftentimes hear is, I had this idea, and now I'm a millionaire. It was so great.
So easy.
And you're like, no, what actually happened is you had an idea, then you were stressed out for 5 years straight, skidding past bankruptcy multiple times, maybe going, you know, the gray in the meantime. And then suddenly you're like, and now I'm a millionaire. It does not at all remotely capture what the process is actually like. And Startups Therapy as a podcast is exactly how it sounds. It's like therapy. It is incredibly, incredibly insightful. So I would say that's number one. And then secondly, I love reading, you know, business stories. I think, and this actually, as I think about it, is pretty much the same thing, but just in text format. One of my favorite books is Shoe Dog, which is all about Nike.
Yeah.
And it is also a real story of like, here's how Nike actually got built. Here's how Phil Knight became a billionaire. It is not like he just became best friends with Michael Jordan. It's like he, you know, was flying to China and, you know, living in hostels and, you know, never sleeping. And then finally, 10 years in, had like a breakthrough. And that's that kind of like real behind the scenes, you know, dialogue and storytelling, I think is so impactful because if you're in a corporate America job, you have so much more stability. You have so much less variance in the day-to-day. Yeah, you've got good days and bad days, but it's not like ultra, ultra highs, ultra, ultra lows. And so when I transitioned from corporate to entrepreneurship, I was not expecting that level of variance. And so for me, I thought, gosh, these bad days are a sign that I'm a failure. And these good days are the sign that, you know, I just got lucky, right? It's very easy to kind of justify the highs as unearned and the lows as your own fault. And so the more that I've really gotten to understand how many people go through this experience, ironically, the more confidence it's given me of this actually is the normal path that I'm following. And that's okay. And that's not a poor reflection of me. It's just, this is what it's like to be an entrepreneur. And in that regard, it's actually incredibly empowering because I can say, okay, I am following the journey. And yeah, it's got a lot of ups and downs, but that's normal. And that's what it takes to keep battling every day towards your dream, because it is, it's a lot of work and it's really hard. And, but on the other side of it, you get a day where you get a phone call that Kroger's taking you. And like, there is no prouder moment than that, to know that somebody in that powerful of a position believes in the thing that you created in your kitchen. And that's an incredible moment.
Catherine, it's been a true pleasure. I could talk to you for a very long time. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your journey with our listeners and me.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much to, you know, the Columbus Chamber of Commerce, who has been an incredible supporter of Spritz from the start, to all the Columbus, you know, people who have supported me, supported Spritz, helped us, you know, work through this pandemic. And of course, I'm going to make a plug, which is thank you to everybody who's going to go buy Spritz at Kroger.
Yay!
When we're on shelf in a few weeks.
That precious shelf space, that they shelf space will be there. Well, for our listeners, if you want to learn more about Catherine and Spritz Tea, before you visit Kroger, visit spritztea.com, spritztea.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to let us know by sharing your ratings and reviews on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you may be listening. Your reviews help people find our show and hear our community stories. We read your feedback and we value your ideas as we plan for future episodes. I'm Michaela Hunt, and we'll chat next time.